You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.
All right, let's get back to some boring subjects.
Understand the risk to our country.
Freedom brings people together.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at WeAreLibertarians.com.
Hey, welcome to the program. My name is Chris Spangle. Welcome to the Chris Spangle Show. We have, it's been so long since we've done a panel show. It's so great to have everybody back. And we're going to do our very first abortion episode, which I'll explain why in 1,300 episodes we've never done one. Right after this, we're going to talk about a little morality, a lot of legal, and it's going to be a constructive, friendly conversation amongst people who disagree on a highly contested topic. See if you can find that somewhere else. I dare you.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Warning. This show is for adults by semi-adults, so the language is sometimes strong and offensive.
I don't know what I said.
Welcome to the Chris Spangle Show. Our goal is to help you sound smarter while talking to your friends. If you struggle to understand politics, we explain it from an independent, libertarian point of view. With all of the irreverence it deserves, we toss out the screaming heads, put people before political parties, and give context to the news to make you think. Now, here's our host, Chris Spangle, a 15-year veteran of politics and media.
Welcome to the program. It is so great to have you all here. It has been a while since we've done a panel show. Summer vacation has been kind of rough. I've managed to kind of keep it consistent, but between me, Harry, Dennis, I don't think ever goes anywhere. Reinhold, sorry. But that's why I called you that. That's how I refer to you in real life. First, before we get started, we want to ask you to join Patreon. That is how we keep the entire We Are Libertarians podcast network going. And we are so thankful for everybody that gives to Patreon and keeps the lights running and just supports a type of content that you don't get a lot of other places, meaning orthodox libertarianism. That's nice. Anyway, so you can get access to bonus episodes. There's a couple bonus episodes. Right now, I've got my personal opinion articulated and elongated in the Patreon. I'm not going to put that into the feed because I'm going to have a lot of conversations. I've never really had a lot of conversations or read a lot about abortion, and I'll tell you why in a moment. So my first draft is there. You get ad-free episodes. You also get the complete archives of the entire network back in the Patreon. We want to especially thank our $100 a month members. They are Vincent Peichel, Lars Nordskog, Jake Edel, Matthew Durbin, Reinhold, Christy Avery, and Jason Doolittle. And we want to welcome back our friends Casey Feldposh and where'd his name go? Shoot. Anyways, we'll have to edit this part out. thank you so much for joining us. Harry, I don't think is joining us. John Pusilo, I'm so sorry, John. Thank you so much for joining us. we don't need you, but you are welcome, Harry. All right, so anyways, Harry is hanging out in the background. First, I just want to say that intro that you heard, this is the final time that you'll probably hear that, because we're doing the show in a different way where I'm doing a lot more interviews. It just doesn't make sense to have two different sets of intros. So if you are a fan boy of the, or fan person of the intro, then you're going to just have to go back, and I can send it to you. You can replay it. But we're going to have just a simpler, more straightforward thing. Doing a lot more nonprofit interviews. I hope that you'll enjoy those, because I've restarted my nonprofit show, and I think it's great to talk to people who are on the ground, as well as promoting the work of people who are on the ground working. And you know, a lot of these, it's just sort of hard to interview like somebody and then have them sit through Donald Trump and Ron Paul yelling. And we're just, you know, the panel show is a little bit here and there. It'll still continue. That's not going to change. But we're just going to do something a little bit simpler. Now, why have we never done an abortion show in 1300 episodes? Because, as I have told you before, it's all settled. It's never going to change. So I started in talk radio in 2004. And I want to mention the passing of my mentor and friend, Andrew Lee, who was the program director up in Minneapolis of a talk station, Twin Cities Talk, and co-host, essentially, to John Justice. And my condolences go to him and Andrew's family. Andrew took a chance and hired me in 2004 as an intern and let me do far too much as an intern. Run the board. I was late. I got a C+ on that internship. But nevertheless, he hired me on to be a part-timer, which led to a full-time position with Abdul, which led me to my literal dream job as the web director of the Bob and Tom Show, where I'm at currently, in addition to doing all of this. And Andrew, I went to him and said, you know, we really should podcast Abdul in like 2005. And he said, I don't know what that is, and no, we're never going to do that. I just loved Andrew, and he took a chance on me. I called it. This is how Republican I was. I was mad that Michael Savage was being interrupted by Indianapolis Indians games, and I was complaining to him because it was interrupting my pizza delivery. And he just wrote back, "Do you make your own dough?" Didn't even respond to my question. And from there, we just started talking, and we were friends for a long time, and it's very sad to hear of his passing. But when you're in talk radio, you didn't talk about abortion. You know, when I was producing the morning show for Abdul, we weighed in on a lot of topics. But abortion in 2007 was the one that you didn't talk about, because it was too inflaming. It was too... If you run a talk radio show, you can kind of tell this. It's a little bit of WWE. It's a lot of cheap heat, as they would call it. You need your heel, like Rob Kendall out there, inflaming people, trying to generate, you know, people's anger, which is what I've rejected a lot here on this show, which is why we're not as popular. But abortion was real heat, and it was real toxic, and you just couldn't talk about it. And the thing about the world now is that everything has become an abortion topic. So if you don't remember politics before now, this is what abortion felt like 15 years ago. And it's a very contentious topic. So I've avoided it for the most part of my career, because that's just what I was trained to do. That's just sort of like, it's a settled question. There's no point in everybody being pissed off. You know, for my own personal opinion, like I said, I put it in the bonus feed. I'll be very clear. I am pro-life. I believe life begins at conception. I do believe that there are carve-outs to it. I don't think that things like ectopic pregnancies are abortions. When it comes down to choosing between the life of the mother and the life of the child, there's no question it's the life of the mother. I am deeply concerned about Republicans' abilities to legislate anything because I pay attention. And that's a lot of what we're going to talk about today. And I want to bring on the panel, now that I've given my bias, almost everybody on the show today disagrees with me. And that is because I want to give voice to people who have points of view that I haven't thought of. And we'll do different shows from different angles on abortion moving forward. But I want to be clear about where I stand. And this past week, if you've lived under a rock, I will give you a basic summation of the conservative view of Roe v. Wade and Dobbs. And then we'll let Sarah sort of say, well, this is what the other side says to begin with. But essentially, Roe v. Wade in 73, there's a great podcast called Slow Burn, and it is tremendously done, and they're doing Roe this season, actually. And Jane Roe essentially went to have an abortion somewhere between 5 to 7 months. They're not really sure where. And someone in a diner was talking about the fact that she had one, maybe someone from the medical staff, and a policeman overheard it. She was then taken to jail, put in jail, and charged with a misdemeanor, three different charges, and then was put on trial. And it went all the way up to the Florida Supreme Court, which struck it down and released her. But it ended up going to the Supreme Court and made Roe v. Wade. Now, the end of it, she was charged with one of the three misdemeanors and put on parole, and her parole was she either had to marry her boyfriend or leave the state, which I don't know how you can't look at anything but tyrannical. And the case, essentially, when Roe v. Wade was decided, was nullifying 43 states' different abortion laws. You started to see a lot of different abortion laws nullified or changed at that time, but Roe v. Wade changed it overnight and created the constitutional right to abortion. And what the conservative justices argued in Dobbs is that we are returning this back to the democratic means. Now, it was never articulated the states in these opinions because there's a very real possibility that Congress can or will pass through Congress either a pro or anti-abortion law. Codify Roe. I think it's more likely that you'd see Roe v. Wade with a constitutional right to abortion pass through Congress than Mike Pence's vision of having it passed. But that is fraught with all kinds of different privacy concerns, because in Jane's, which is not her real name, in Jane's case, you see the privacy concerns surrounding her situation. So with me today, after we've kind of set that up, is a cast of characters, not Harry, who is just doesn't have his face on right now, he says. He was, I think, hoping for another week off. But with us is Reinhold, old trusty Reinhold, who is here to present the white male version. Thank you, Reinhold, for being with us.
I'm glad to be here, and I think it is important that we get the white male view on this topic.
Well, so we haven't had enough for that. Of our vision presented, and really, I am an expert at wombs. All right, next up is Trisha Stewart Mann, host of Gingerarchy. We are about to post, as soon as I get it done, an interview with Brian Nichols. You've got one with Hody on Gamergate, so make sure you go check out Gingerarchy. Sign up for that. Trisha, how are you today?
I am doing well, and I actually probably have a closer opinion to yours than other people. So I'll give you the ginger female perspective, because that's always very important.
Sarah Brady, who is just an all-star in my book. I love Sarah and Reinhold in our group because I'm just liberal enough to get a lot of liberal people following me, but I'm just conservative enough to piss them off. And so they sort of start taunting me until they just give up. But Sarah and Reinhold are two friends that have not given up. And we're doing this show because I've learned so much reading what they've said about all of this in the group chat that I just think it's a worthwhile discussion. And Sarah is one of the smartest people I know. and really knows so much more. You know so much more about wombs than I do. So thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you. You know, I like to think I have a kind of a really comprehensive view on the issue just from going through dealing with not only knowing people who've had abortion, but having, you know, been pregnant, like, you know, Trisha also can speak to the motherhood experience, but having also dealt with the infertility. This as an end of life kind of conversation when it comes to libertarianism is really difficult to have. And I really appreciate you having it for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And new to the program, but one of my favorite people, my favorite new friends, is Kat from the podcast Fake Ass Book Club. They had me on their podcast to talk about Scary Close. Kat and I, is it fair to say we're frenemies? We are friends, but I love that you and I can argue in the DMs and we go back and forth. You're one of the smartest people I know. And you said, look, you just need to have me on your show to talk about this. And so I said, okay.
I wouldn't say we're frenemies. That's how I talk to my friends.
Good. All right. That's how I talk to my friends, too.
So I just say we're friends.
Reinhold can verify that. I give Reinhold more crap than anybody else, but that's just because I love him the most.
And I would just like to say with my background, because I've been on both sides of these issues, I was raised in a very conservative church and was pro-life for years. And now I would say I'm pro-good life.
Okay.
So I'm more on the side of letting people decide what they want to do with their life.
Yeah, I mean, I was very pro-choice until a relationship where, you know, I was not my child, but abortion was involved, and it sort of led to the end of the relationship, and it started to make me think. So it's like people's life experiences over time on this issue shade a lot of things. Sarah, I mean, and we can articulate more where you all stand if you want before we move on to kind of the case, because I think that's an interesting discussion. Kat, maybe you want to talk more about it. As you go on, like, I know as a man who has been married twice and now, you know, we are actively trying to have children and we are having issues, you learn a lot more and you learn about how complicated it is and all these tests that you have to get and what you have to do. And to be candid, my wife has put this out there. We have been married 6 months and we've had 4 miscarriages, which is not fun. And trying to discover what is going on has led to quite the education on how difficult conception is and how difficult it is just to be a woman. I mean, Reinhold, we don't have the same, like, I wake up and shower and then just have sex and that's it. I don't have any other, I don't have to think about anything else. But I think
that sounds awesome.
It is. It really is. Yeah. Great. I don't have to get anything really tested other than my blood sugar now. But I think that has shaded my view on like the legislation portion of this. I mean, it has not necessarily moved my view on the morality of the issue, but I mean, Sarah, maybe we start with you. Like, how has your experiences with IVF and infertility and finally becoming a mother, how has that kind of shaded this for you personally?
So I think what you said was really relevant, which is that there are two different elements to this, which is there's kind of how you view it personally and morally, and then how you view it legally and what you would legislate. And it's so easy to combine those two. But I think, you know, that's kind of where the libertarian strength comes in, that we can discuss how those can be separate. So my view has really firmly developed more that I don't think that it's okay to legislate forcing a pregnancy to continue. Because when we're talking about abortion, another part reason that this gets, you know, kind of confused is that abortion by itself is the procedure of terminating a pregnancy. And the tragic result that comes from that in many cases is that if you terminate a pregnancy, there is a human life that dies because it cannot live without being connected to somebody else's body in order to grow to the point where it could live on its own. But abortion itself is just removing the pregnancy. So when we talk about the medical side of that, it really comes into light when you have to deal with the medical side of trying to reproduce. Because, you know, you talked about how Reagan has gone through many miscarriages. And part of that is those are termed medically as a spontaneous abortion. So that is still her body removing a pregnancy. And the way that it comes down to the healthcare portion of it, if her body was not able to remove that pregnancy, she would have to go to the hospital and have an abortion procedure that is the exact same procedure that they would do to surgically remove an unwanted pregnancy that maybe could have been taken to the point of viability. So when we talk about legislating those issues, that's why it's talked about as being a healthcare issue, because it really crosses over not just into women who are dealing with unwanted pregnancies, but abortion is a procedure that is used for women who are really seeking to have a pregnancy that is taken to the point of being carried to full term. You know, when women go in and you have as part of a wanted pregnancy, something that turns out that the fetus is not viable or it becomes dangerous to the mother, even in those terms of ectopic pregnancies, removing a pregnancy is still abortion procedure. So if we want it to be separate, we really can talk about it in terms of, is it okay to terminate a life in the process of terminating a pregnancy? But when we legislate the issue as just abortion, it covers everything in that realm. And it leads to situations where a woman can end up in the hospital bleeding out because her body is trying to have a miscarriage. And the proper medical thing, if abortion is illegal, is to just keep transfusing blood and hope that her body figures it out. And in that case, the thing to do that would save her life would still kill the fetus. And before Roe versus Wade, there were laws on the books that did legislate abortion and things like that. And those were the outcomes. You know, we talk about death panels when it comes to socialized and government-controlled healthcare. And that is literally what happens in these cases. When you have laws that are trying to balance the issue around those two lives, you end up having panels of people at hospitals who have to determine whether a woman is supposed to be kept on constant transfusions of blood, hoping that her body will save a pregnancy, or to remove the pregnancy and actually save the woman. And those are such complicated issues that really are not done any help when we add law into the situation. So, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, I wanted to say in the Roe case in Florida, which the law was written in the 1800s, I think it was in the late 1800s because Florida didn't become a state till later, but the law that was overturned by the Florida Supreme Court before Roe v. Wade was ever decided, so the state figured it out on its own without the Supreme Court's help, by the way, was that abortion was allowed until the quickening, which they explained was the moving of the child in the stomach, and it was also allowed in the case of saving the mother. And Planned Parenthood and Live Action, which is a very pro-life action group, all agree that the situation that you're talking about, abortion should be allowed. It's not even to Live Action considered an abortion in their terminology, which is a staunchly pro-life group. It's the legislatures that want to make you bury your miscarriages and get death certificates for them that are, in a lot of cases, I think, going to defy the pro-life and the pro-choice groups and go against sort of what you said. But I do want to... And there were a lot of the trigger laws that had that exception for what you're talking about, correct, Sarah?
Well, that's where it gets hard when you get into legislation, is because the way we talk about it when we're having conversations really about the morality of the issue is absolutely not transfer over into the way that they legislate the issue. So, you know, when we talk about abortion, like you said, there are plenty of groups who say, oh, well, those healthcare abortions, those aren't really abortions. But when you write laws about abortion, those are abortions. And so what they try and do is they try and write in carve-outs. And what we see is kind of a patchwork state to state, where some states were like, oh, I thought about that. And then in other states, you know, you have Ohio debating whether or not we should require physicians to try and re-implant ectopic pregnancies. You know, so you have such this range where in some states you may have legislation that's very, very specific and thinks of all of these different situations in which, you know, we're going to just write down on the books exactly how you're supposed to handle these situations. But it's such a complex issue that you're always going to have, you know, exceptions to those situations and things that didn't get thought about. And then in those situations, who decides? Well, you just have to go off of the letter of the law.
Kat, jump in here.
Happy to, Chris. So just a strong agree to Sarah there, because the other part of this is that abortion is a medical procedure that's become stigmatized. Because I love that you pointed out that medically a miscarriage is a spontaneous abortion. And that's just something I learned after it happened to me. I feel like this goes into sex education, which is also something that is trying to be struck down by people who are trying to legislate and stigmatize these procedures that are often life-saving. And like at the end of the day, very private. If we belong to ourselves, if my body, and I mean, considering my over part of them and my ovum, all of that part of me, if I'm just being treated 3D printer, then I think that everything kind of starts to fall apart as far as liberty is concerned.
Trisha, do you want to weigh in?
Yeah. So I am personally pro-life, and it's really strange for me to try to describe how I feel about abortion. But again, what Kat and Sarah said, absolutely. As an anarchist, I don't believe, you know, in states legislating morality, because it never works. And we go into a lot of danger zones where privacy is concerned. I worry about miscarriages possibly being investigated. And if anybody's ever had an ex-mother-in-law or an ex-spouse that's not a nice person, oh Lord, that could be really, really dangerous. Just the way CPS can do, you know, and anything that they could do could happen. But as far as like my personal beliefs, I do believe life begins at conception because I'm a spiritual person. I believe in a creator, and I believe that human beings are divine and made in the image of their creator. However, that is my spiritual belief, and there's no way I can force somebody else to believe that. And I do believe in some circumstances warrant taking a life. I think that sometimes it may not be the easiest choice, but I do not think it is wrong. There's a few exceptions for me. Obviously, the mother's life, because you're choosing life at that point. It's just a different one. I do believe if the child is not going to be viable, to continue to carry it when it's going to die doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It's just causing more pain for two people and possibly hurting the mother as well, because pregnancy is dangerous. And then I do believe in the case of rape or incest that you should not be mandated to carry someone else's life, and it is okay to end a life. Now, some women choose not to do that, and that's also their choice. So I think any legislation prohibiting it can really get into dangerous areas, especially the trigger laws in Ohio, which Sarah mentioned, which are, I think they were just written as a virtue signal because they make absolutely no sense. really, really poor legislation. And the procedure to put an ectopic pregnancy back into the womb, it doesn't really exist.
How is that not
arguing that?
artificially intervening in life, if you're just from a biblical point of view, if your goal is to, well, let God figure it out, like, all right. Anyways, before I move on to Reinhold, I want to make sure you're done, Trisha.
Yeah, so that's basically my overview. I know sometimes it's hard, and I like that we're having this conversation together and not screaming at each other, because trying to tell people that I believe sometimes you can take a life sounds really disturbing to some people, but I appreciate being able to try to explain that the best I can. So,
old lefty Reinhold, let's hear. Yes, ma'am. Oh. Kat, go ahead.
I was going to say, Chris, real quick, we're not going to be able to scream at each other. I thought at the end this becomes a loud, screamy fight.
Oh, we can. And it does okay. Get contentious sometimes. Feel free to scream. Okay. Shout your abortion.
I'm just kidding.
That's extra Patreon special.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to hear what Reinhold
is. I am more and more convinced, as I try to figure out what I'm doing with this show, because it's not that I'm not libertarian. It's just that libertarians make it clear I'm not one of them as much as I used to be. And as I feel more and more alienated from that group and don't necessarily feel that I have much in common with where the libertarian movement is going, I've just sort of felt for like 2 years, like my politics divides people. So you're going to hear on Monday, a podcast with a group on the Indiana Coalition of Domestic Violence. She's a social worker who does prevention, where she goes to schools to teach people how to be nonviolent, right? And I can just tell, like, in how she talks, like, she and I are on different planets about probably everything. But when we talk about caring for people, like, it's one of my favorite episodes. Like, there wasn't anything that we disagreed with. But, like, if we were going to look at political solutions, we were going to be on at odds, right? But abortion, to me, has always been one of those heart issues where you can, like, use the state to bludgeon your opponents, and you can use it as a topic to fundraise. Nancy Pelosi is sending her emails. Cigar, I forget what the Crystal and Cigar show, like, posted Nancy Pelosi's fundraising emails, because they're not going to do anything about it, but they're going to take your money on it. And shows are going to use it to drive ratings because they want to piss you off. But, like, that's not going to do anything for anybody. That's not going to save it. Like, when the ruling came down Friday, like, as a Christian, I'm glad that my side has the ability to protect life, but it more made me feel like there's so much more work to do, and Christians are so not ready to do that work. Like, they get a bad rap because most of the social service agencies that we're interviewing on the show, like, were started by Christians who are doing fostering care, doing things like Young Life and Embrace Grace, but there's not enough. Like, Christians are so willing to go to church and sit in the pews and give their money, but never their heart or their time to people who are in these tough situations. And this is just going to create more carnage. It's going to create more tough situations. So, like, to me, it's not necessarily a reason to celebrate. It's people chasing after control of the kingdom instead of the king. And it's been sort of grievous as me to watch as a Christian to see the reaction to a lot of this, because there's a lot of work to do and a lot of opportunities to do the work. But, you know, I just would caution people, if you're watching these shows that are just tickling your ears to get you to donate, to get you to listen by causing you to scream, then you should just stop it. Because so that's what this show is about, is just trying to get people to think differently, talk differently, and model good conversations about tough topics. Now, Reinhold, you son of a bitch, commie, can you please tell us where you stand on abortion?
So I don't know how far deep and you want to get into this, but I look at life, and Trisha had said something that kind of ties into what I'm trying to say here, is that human beings are different than other life on this planet, right? We have, you know, animals and plants that are all have their own, like, structures. They have their own cell splitting, they're breathing, that sort of thing. But what makes humans different is the fact that we have a sentience. We understand, we can comprehend that we will die someday. So that's really kind of what makes a being human, not just the fact that they have cell division happening or they're growing inside of a womb, etc. Now, I believe that life does begin at conception, but I also understand that it's more of a potential life than it is an actual life at that point. And it's really hard to pinpoint a specific moment. It's not as easy as people want to try to make it. You can say at conception, but what happens if at conception it doesn't implant? Is that a life or not a life? It just kind of flushes away. You know, I mean, it's not as clear cut and simple. It's very much more nuanced. And in that situation, because of that, it really needs to be a decision that's left up to the people involved. So, a quick story. My wife and I were trying to get pregnant for several years. She had pain one day. We went to the hospital, found out that she was pregnant. Then they came in later, 10, 15 minutes later, to let us know that it was an ectopic pregnancy. It was inside of her fallopian tube. The options we had were to remove the fallopian tube, or to take a shot of some medication. I don't know which it was, but it was supposed to kind of dissolve the pregnancy. So we had to make the decision on that, which way we wanted to go with it. We really didn't have much of a choice at that point of what we could do. But the last thing that needed to happen at that moment is to have another person in that room with a gun that other people have ordered to be there to make sure that we're not doing the wrong thing, to have a say in that decision. No one else had that right. And that's where I come on the abortion side of things, is that this decision is so personal and so specific to each individual situation. It's not as, you know, easy to determine in every situation what the right answer is. It's really something that has to be left up to the woman and the doctor to determine what's the best solution for that person.
Yeah. So I was talking with a couple liberal leaning female friends, and they're like, it's not that I'm pro abortion. It's that we're talking about women's health care, and it just makes me pissed off that we're talking about women's health care, and it makes it extremely personal. And there's like, maybe one of you ladies can explain it, because they couldn't articulate sort of the rage that was inside of them. And I said, if you've watched the inhumanity of Republicans for the last 7 years specifically, that's a perfectly rational and reasonable position.
It doesn't help either when you
have... I said ladies, Reinhold. Go ahead, though.
I just want to say it doesn't help when you have people who are supposedly political leaders in certain groups and movements who are just calling women who get abortions whores.
All right.
That does not help the situation at all.
Yeah. No, I think, well, we could tone police all day, believe me. Sarah, go ahead.
Well.
No, I was just going to say that it's, I understand when they say it's hard to articulate, because it kind of ties back to me in trying to explain why it's frustrating sometimes to have conversations, usually with men, where we have to make analogies to help you to understand how it might feel to be in a situation where you have another person growing inside of you, where you have another being, whether you want to say that that is a person or a fetus, but you have something else that is inside of you and using your body. Whenever we have to have conversations to make analogies, we make analogies to inanimate objects, because it's so hard to be able to really convey the personal nature of when we're talking about legislating what happens inside of our bodies. I think that's really the best way that I can articulate it, is when we talk about it as a healthcare issue and why these laws can sometimes just get so frustrating, is because if we can talk about your property rights in regards to your house, you know, in a dispassionate state, and that's even something that people struggle to separate themselves from, how much more personal is it when we're talking about not just your, do you have the right to decide who's in your house, but do you have the right to decide what happens inside of your own body? And I mean, it doesn't get much more personal than that.
I get that, but the, like, if you look at the numbers from Florida 2017, reasons women get abortion, rape or incest was 0.13%. Life-endangering physical condition was 0.2%. Serious fetal genetic defect was 0.9%. Physical or emotional health, 2.33%. Social or economic reasons was 16.25%. And elective abortion with no reason was 80%. So that's the ending of a life because it's inconvenient.
Well, not necessarily. So as far as like survey measures go, I mean, as libertarians, how often have you guys ever marked, refuse to answer when they're trying to gather demographic information? In this case, if there is a refuse to answer or no other reason specified, when it comes down to a highly personal decision in which the other options are, do you not have enough money? Do you feel like there's social pressure? Were you raped or are you harmed?
And in a lot of situations,
they might just say, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, people don't like admitting being raped. It feels bad, especially if that person is a relative of yours. Like, you're actually putting yourself in danger for saying, this person raped me. like a lot of times you don't even get to tell the truth. Like telling the truth isn't an option for everybody.
Yeah, but the argument so often is the Guttmacher Institute numbers and so many of the numbers, it's birth control abortions are the main amount of abortions that take place.
And those are in, it goes to sex education. They're not mm-hmm. taught about how to prevent pregnancy. So you said that's in Florida. Florida is an abstinence only education state. So how well does abstinence only work? Really bad.
One of the most successful abortion reduction measures that we have seen across the states is Colorado. When Colorado provided comprehensive sex education and free birth control to teenagers, they saw their abortion rates drop.
So Sarah, I want to not offend you, but I think Will Coley is saying here, what Sarah's putting forth is what I like to call infants as parasites theory, where you dehumanize the infant and refer to it the same as a tapeworm in order to justifying its right to life. How would you respond to that?
I absolutely do recognize the right of the infants. In fact, I think one of the things that makes these conversations difficult is when we do cross over into that IVF land. You know, if we are to recognize life at conception, then that includes the millions of embryos that are in freezers and likely to never be given any more chance at life than that. And that's a really relevant question for us to ask. What I think is the issue is that you have two lives here that are at stake. You have the woman and the life that is dependent on the woman. So we talk about the baby's right to life. But when we talk about rights, we're talking about negative rights. And when you say that the baby has a life to right that then confers to it a right over the woman's body, you're turning that right to life into a positive right that says that somebody else can have a right to your body. To me, that's the same kind of logic that gets us to conscription, that gets us to slavery, is to say that there is a situation in which somebody else can have rights to use your body regardless of what you want. So I think that
because
there's a life, we should encourage women to carry pregnancies. But when it comes to allowing the state to come in and tell you what you have to do with your body, I'm not comfortable with that. So if there's a social issue that says women think that abortion is the easy way out, we need to address that. We don't necessarily need to force a woman into that bad situation. Help her to see a better way out of that situation. Don't force her to be in that situation.
We totally agree. And I want to talk about what we talked about yesterday with, you know, what we can encourage and, you know, capitalism, all that. But I'm going to ask this in a very inflammatory way, Sarah and Kat, weigh in too, and then Reinhold, you're last. We are talking about...
No, Trisha?
Well, Trisha, I think, is probably going to agree with me. but she can weigh in too if she wants.
Okay.
We're talking... The conversation about abortion is always wrapped up in the most dire position, right? Okay. But I believe it's the murdering of a life. It's the taking of a life. And you are basically asking, when is it okay, or for what reason is it okay to take the life, right, Sarah? Because I don't disagree with you on ectopic pregnancy, but if you're pregnant and you just don't want to have the baby anymore because it's an inconvenient life, there's plenty of people in my life that are inconvenient, that cost me a lot of money, that make my quality of life worse, but I don't get to end their life just for those reasons. And I think that's, to me, what is frustrating about the more pro-choice position, because we're talking about very specific places where I agree, but we're not talking about the larger set of people that just think it's their right to take a life.
So I think you're right. It comes down to, when is it okay to take a life? And that is something that morally and legally are two different conversations. I think morally, I kind of take the same position I do on it with self-defense, that just because you can shoot someone, just because you are legally allowed to shoot someone, does not mean that you should. And if it is not too much of an inconvenience for you to incapacitate someone who is causing a threat to you, or to just reduce the amount of threat that they can pose to you, then that is the moral and just thing to do. But at the same time, I am not comfortable using government to force someone to do the moral thing. But the moral thing to me is, I think we should make it easier for women who have unwanted pregnancies to carry them if they are able to, but that is such a physically taxing thing that I can't decide for another woman if she's physically able to. I know for me, pregnancy was way harder than I expected it to be. I have wanted to be a mother for years, decades even. And when I actually finally got the opportunity to, the physical process of growing another human is something that is, we actually treat it like a disability in the United States is the way that we handle it. So rather than having maternity leave, a lot of places just have a short-term disability leave because pregnancy and childbirth are considered disabilities. And it's that kind of physical threat that I'm not comfortable forcing another person to go through, but I will absolutely encourage someone to go through in service of another life. But I kind of view it the same way that I would military service. If there's a just war that we're in, if there's, if our country needs defending, I will, respect and appreciate any person who decides to go and risk their body in defense of my life and the life of our countrymen. But I'm not going to support a draft that says your body belongs to the state to use in defense of other people's lives, because I'm not comfortable using your body, even if it is something that will help to bring another life to existence or will help to prevent another life from dying. It kind of would be the same as forcing people to give blood in a shortage. But what's interesting about the Dobbs case is that essentially they held that government does have the right to do those things. And it's consistent with Supreme Court precedents that you don't necessarily own your body. The state has a right to legislate its use in a variety of ways. And this is just one that they've decided the state still has a right to, at the state level, legislate if they so choose to.
Kat, go ahead. Respond to what I said, please.
Okay, so I'm going to yes and Sarah real quick. And also respond to your question about sort of the fact that abortion is sometimes used as birth control. Because I want to call back to the fact that I used to be staunchly, I was at the rallies quoting abortion as murder signs. Like, that's how I grew up. But, you go to college, you start critically thinking, and I had to review everything that I thought of as morality. So now I am not a Christian at all. Reread the Bible, not down with it. So if you're looking at it from a moral standpoint of I'm a secular humanist, and so for me, I'm trying to reduce suffering, unnecessary suffering amongst people. And that's why sometimes I'm like, with libertarians, I get that, because for people who are just listening to this, I'm a Black woman. So there's a lot
what?
Of other issues. if you're watching it, but honestly, like, my voice doesn't communicate that I'm a Black woman. I actually get a lot of privilege because I have a very Anglo name. And over the phone, I went to predominantly white institutions. So I come off as what might be considered white, but in person, very Black. So when I do have to engage with the medical system, I do experience medical racism. I have two children, very difficult pregnancies. I had hyperemesis. So people who don't know, that's when you constantly throw up, even not just in the morning, all the time. Had to go to the hospital to be rehydrated. My doctor sent me, the nurse wouldn't admit me. She told me I was being dramatic. Throwing up is a regular part of pregnancy. Go home. Honestly, the only reason I didn't leave is because I had to pay for parking. And I'm like, I'm not coming back up here again when my doctor sends me again. I know in my mind, doctors outrank nurses. She wouldn't admit me until I gave her a urine sample. And then finally, when she saw that my proteins were broken down, she admitted me into the hospital. By this time, I'm so exhausted. Like, I didn't have anyone with me. I would also say, too, if you go to the hospital, bring a medical advocate, because when you're sick, it's very difficult to advocate for yourself, if that's possible. When I had both of my children, if I hadn't had medical advocacies, there's a very good chance I would have died. Black women are 3 times more likely to die in childbirth than any other population. So that's a lot of times where I'm coming from it, where I used to think that, because I was just taught that in school and in church, I was always getting the message, life starts at conception. When I actually had to go and re-educate myself, because I realized a lot of the things I was taught were not correct, what I learned was that that's not necessarily that, yes, there's life. The ovum itself can be alive or dead. The sperm itself can be alive or dead. All of those things can be alive or dead. That can be the same for a fetus. To me, as a human secularist, When does consciousness start? That's dicey. So like when we make these lines of, well, we know at 6 weeks, there's no brain. Like when they use the heartbeat bills and stuff like that, heartbeats are cool. Lots of things have heartbeats because actually I do think we're animals. Like we're evolved from animals. We do have sentience, but there are other animals that have sentience. They don't talk like we do. But since we can moralize, we can legislate, these legislations don't belong in this arena. It's been stigmatized as a political tool, like you said, by Republicans. I feel like my whole life I've been parroting a lot of Republican talking points without even realizing it because I wasn't educated about the subject. So I think I said enough, but
I want to ask you, you know, an 8 week old child has the DNA, their own separate DNA. They have a heartbeat if you can detect it. They have the ability to move. I mean, they have organs. Like at what point, even just take religion out of it, right? Just from if you believe humans do have sentience and there is a viable human being in that can be carried to term, at what point should you be allowed to end that life electively?
I think we should leave that to experts like bioethicists. Like, honestly, I'm a podcaster. Like, I'm not a professional and medical expert as far as embryology goes. I know I was taught that there's a lot going on at 8 weeks that actually isn't. So at 8 weeks, there's no brain function. Like, and of course, there's its own DNA, but your ovum have its own DNA. Your sperm has, that's how they track rapists. Your sperm has its own DNA. So that's not, to me, an indication of sentience. So we would have to go into sort of a longer discussion of what the definitions of sentience is. But at that point, I don't think that a conscious creature is being harmed at an 8 week abortion.
8 month?
At an 8 month one, yes. That is something that has a brain and can feel pain.
Okay. Reinhold, your opinion about what I said. If you remember it. If not, I can try to remember what I said and rephrase it. And then Trisha, you're up next.
I think it had something to do with the people who are using abortion for birth control.
Yeah. What's your moral position on that?
I think, first of all, that premise is kind of skewed in a way because I don't think there are many women, and correct me if I'm wrong, the women on the panel, who think that going to get an abortion is no big deal. Is not a no big deal. It's a painful procedure. Usually it's invasive. It's not something anybody wants to go do. So this idea that people are using it as a form of birth control, and as opposed to a backstop when birth control fails.
I'm not saying that anybody walks in and screams YOLO. I can tell you from personal experience that it's a very traumatic experience that trauma never really goes away.
I think the polarization of the issue has caused some of that at the extremes. So like I have encountered, actually when I was in jail, I have encountered women who do think of it very cavalierly. But I don't think that that's the norm. At least that has not been my experience. And I think that that is something that we can point to having been caused by when you really emphasize the stigmatization of something that is still a necessary thing for a lot of women, even for healthcare standards, then you try to legislate it, you get this cultural pushback that, you know, the shout my abortion movement, where in order to try to counter the stigmatization, they say, oh no, it can be something that you can be proud of.
That's
great at all.
It's a little bit of the own the cons that Reinhold has talked about. Like, we're going to be anti-adoption because the cons are for it. Like the, yes. You know, Reinhold, finish up and then we'll go to Trisha to see what she says.
Oh, well, it's just that I think that, so we have to determine when that decision gets made and who makes that decision, even if we disagree with the reasons behind it. You know, if you're going to try and say, well, we need to know every abortion that happens, we need to know why it's happening in order to approve it or not approve it, then you're really just putting people in that decision-making process for everybody and for everything, not just the situations where you think it should be stopped at.
But if it's murder, right? If it's murder, Reinhold, and it's intentional, the intent is to kill a life, why well, do you not in, see that they're
the in my situation
you let it go life. Let it go. Now, I'm not talking about your situation. I think the vast majority of people understand your situation and don't agree that that's, you know.
But that's the problem is
not that everybody agrees with him. A lot of people agree that she should have bled out because that was God's will.
But even worse than that is it's like,
sure,
you don't get to say, you know, it's magnanimous to say, okay, well, in your situation, we won't punish you for having murdered somebody, but you're still saying I murdered somebody, right? My wife and I murdered a child. It was alive. We killed it. Therefore, we're murderers. Now, we can say, well, we understand and we see the justification for it. But that stigma is still there when you do that. So in the whole, all these talks about once it's conceived, that's it. It's a life. You have to protect it at all costs. I just think that that's damaging to the reality of human life and what women have to go through in making that decision, whether or not they're able to continue on with that pregnancy or not.
Tricia?
Yeah, excuse me. I was thinking about what I said and how I do agree with you. And it's actually not necessarily that I believe life begins at conception. I actually believe it always was and will go on. So I believe that, you know, we as human beings embody that here on Earth. But the problem with that is that's my personal belief. I believe in objective reality. I do believe that that's reality. It might sound crazy to some people, but I can't legislate for somebody to say, well, this is what I actually believe. And so therefore we need to make this law around this. Also, purely the fact that I'm an anarchist. So when you say, should the government, the only answer exist would be the next part of the question. And I will say no. Yes, I do believe that you're killing a child in the womb. And I do believe murder is occasionally justified. So, yeah, I think it's pretty disgusting to snip the back of a baby's neck when they can feel it. I find that purely evil. But no amount of legislation is going to fix that. I guarantee you women will continue to have even late-term abortions. The way to fix it is not to make legislation that can be very, very dangerous. And if you look at Ohio's legislation, good Lord, I mean, so if the mother's life is in danger, what needs to happen is two doctors that aren't professionally related need to come to that decision. Okay, I don't know how you do that working in a hospital because you're pretty much professionally related to everybody there. And if this woman's bleeding out, who are you going to just call some random doctor and see if he believes? It doesn't make any sense, and it's frankly dangerous and stupid. And so that's my biggest issue with that. Would I like to see no unnecessary termination of pregnancy? Absolutely. But again, this is not going to fix it. Just like I'm not a big fan of heroin, but you know, making heroin illegal has never really done much to stop people from using heroin.
Have you considered aborting Ohio?
It sounds like Ohio is, yes, we're leaving Ohio eventually, but we're here for now.
Kat.
And I want to say, too, this goes back to the idea of this really comes down to with the Roe versus Wade, the legislation of abortion, because I think it should be on an individual basis. If your conscience speaks to you that this is a life and you shouldn't and under any circumstances take it, then that is your decision. It's the same thing when people who are Jehovah's Witnesses, they refuse blood transfusions because there is deeply held belief that that is something that is against their theology. I don't know how, you know, I don't know how they got there. That's none of my business. But if I go to the hospital and I need a blood transfusion and for some reason the Jehovah's Witnesses are in charge now and they've legislated that you can't get blood transfusions now, like, I feel like that's the real slippery slope argument of now it just seems to be the personal morality of the people who get to decide what medical procedures people get to have.
But I mean, at what point does the fetus have an individual right to life that needs to be protected?
I honestly don't think they did. I don't think I had a right to be born. My mom let me be born, and I'm glad she did. She wanted me. My mom had fertility issues. It took them 6 years to conceive. She didn't tell me until I was like almost an adult that I'm a miracle baby. I was like, I could have known this whole time I was a miracle, and now I'm just now finding out that like you were told by the doctors because they were looking into adoption. They were told she could not have kids, and so then here I come along and boom, I'm here. I have two kids. I love them. They were deeply wanted. But they know that I'm pro-choice. Like if I didn't want to have kids, I wouldn't have had them. I think they love the knowledge that they were deeply wanted. I've worked in the school system. I've worked for non-for-profits. These systems where because we live in a state that's very unfriendly to abortion. And so the fact that there are all of these unwanted children that are in the system, they know they're unwanted. They're told they're unwanted. Like to me, that's why I say I'm pro good life, because there's what can you say to them? It's like that's a horrible existence to know that you're only here because your mom was forced to carry you.
Sarah, you look like you wanted to say something, and then I want to talk a lot more about what Kat just said, and I think let's find the places where we all agree and be pro-good life.
Well, I think what Kat said was important when we're talking about a right to life. It's not a right to life, as I said before, as the way we understand it generally is a negative right. It's a right to not be killed. But when we're talking about a right to life, when someone's life is dependent on the sacrifice of another person. We talked about that, it is a wonderful, amazing sacrifice that mothers give, that they give their bodies for 9 months to grow and, bring another being into existence. But every baby is born non-consensually. Like that baby did not consent to being brought into existence and did not necessarily ask to be born, but it also doesn't necessarily confer a right to be born. That is something that is a wonderful gift from the mother when she chooses to give her body in that way. And it's something that we should encourage, but is it something that we want to legislate?
So I saw Lila Rose, a pro-life activist, say on Reels or Instagram somewhere that abortion is the only place where social ills are, how did she phrase it? I don't want to screw it up, but I will. We don't kill homeless to solve a social ill, but it has become permissible and encouraged to encourage abortion to solve a lot of society's problems.
No, but you know what we do? We do let them die. And right. That is also tragic. And there's a difference between killing and letting die. To kill is to actively be involved in the death of another person, but to let someone die is to not give what you could to keep them alive. If you don't give food to a starving person, if you don't give shelter to a homeless person, then you let them die. If you don't give your body to a gestating fetus, that fetus will die. You're letting them die. And that's not a morally positive thing, but it's not the same thing, at least to me, as killing.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Lolly Focus Pops or Lolly Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Kat, did you want to weigh in?
I always want to weigh in.
I watched your body language and you're like, oh, I've got something to say here.
Because not that I believe, but when I was finally able to learn about evolution, because I went to a school where evolution was not only not taught, but was taught against. So when you learn about how evolution works, every species, every female of every species gets to decide who's born and who's not. And that creates sexual competition. And that, once again, it goes into sex education, like all of these things, biology, sex education, they go hand in hand. They're taught separately. But when you look at the larger picture of what do we want as human beings? I'm currently reading How to Be Perfect, the Michael Shore book about morality and stuff. So a lot of this sounds like the trolley problem, right? Like, do you kill this person to let this person live? And then when you throw it up into another situation, like, we're trying to get to these universal maxims. And I think what I've learned from this book is there are no universal maxims. And what we're trying to do is legislate universal maxims, which is conception starts at, or life starts at conception. Whereas I would argue it goes back further, because if I had a dead ovum that I dropped, like, that was just dead on DOA, dead on arrival. And so I don't believe in the concept. I was taught the concept of a soul. I don't actually believe. I think that was just something that I was taught that was made the theology convenient. I don't think that's a real thing. I think that things that are real are incest. Like, that happens a lot, like an uncomfortable amount. A lot of men have sex with their daughters. And I think, because I have these discussions a lot. They say they feel like abortion is barbaric. I'm like, I feel like it's barbaric to make a girl have their father's baby. A lot of times that leads to suicide, because if women aren't able to either escape those situations, one, financial is huge. That's why I'm in favor of universal basic income. That would solve so much domestic violence. You said you're having the coalition. I'm a survivor of two, I've been in two abusive marriages. And it just so happened I was able to find resources to get away. Lots of women can't, and so they stay in those situations. A lot of men, we talk about Miss Pat. Like, a lot of men have sex with underage girls, a lot. The underage girls are blamed for that and are put in these impossible situations where now you have to make a living and support multiple people. So to me, it extrapolates into so many different areas. That's why this is such an impassioned topic, because people want, and let me just say, I've always been a baby person. I always knew I wanted to be a mom. That's why I was a pro-lifer for so long, because when they're like, they're killing babies, I love babies. Like, what are they? Oh, we can cuss, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was like, what the fuck? They're killing babies? Let's stop this. Like, I'm out there holding the signs. And then it doesn't take long once my, people around me, and I see what actually happens when people get pregnant and things go wrong. And for so many women, sex is not a choice. It's a means of survival. And so, we're saying women, girls. A lot of times these are underage girls who are forced in these situations, a lot of times because they were unwanted children themselves. So they're a lot easier to prey upon. And I had this thought too, because, I went to Catholic school and, the Catholics very anti-abortion. And I was like, well, you guys are raping the kids. Why should we just keep pumping out kids we can't take care of? You say you'll help us take care of them, and then you're raping them. So to me, it's like, let's stop and think about this. Do I want to have kids? And am I even going to be a good mother? Can I provide for them? If not, this person that I'm living with who's constantly having sex with me and will kick me out if I stop, I don't know if I want to have their children. I'll stop there because I can keep going.
No, you're good. Patrick in the comments says, well, in cases where sex isn't a choice, an abortion should be a choice. Otherwise, you live with the consequences and the other person does not. Now, there's a lot of people who would say the life of the fetus should, the life of the child should not be punished for the sins of the father. My wife went to a conference and ran into an organization called Embrace Grace, and she's working to set one up here because she found, she was a single mom who came from a very Christian family. they were supportive of her. But when you're in the situation where you're in a religious situation and an unwanted pregnancy and you have to tell your family, you know how it's going to go. And that's why I read in the bonus show some statistics from a book where it was like 60% of abortions are from people who are connected to churches. And it's simply because of purity culture and the way that the church and so my wife really just feels like she wants to do something to make change in that area. And this group, they used to put like the pamphlets in the crisis pregnancy centers and, you know, with the pictures of fetuses and this is your baby, and it just didn't work. And so what they do is they send like care packages with a onesie that says something about the child being a gift and offers support groups, throws showers. I'm actually going to interview the group because I thought it was, they have a lot of interesting statistics. But what Reagan basically told me is that you'd be amazed at how many of these girls don't have anybody to throw them a baby shower, that don't have anybody to teach them some basics. They don't have anybody else that they can talk to about their experiences of being pregnant. They're completely alone in so many different places. And these are not just people in economically disadvantaged situations. These are people like my wife who are just scared and alone because they have not summoned up the courage to talk to their family about it. So they choose to end the life. And what they've found is that this group has like an 80% success rate just because they're doing something. They're being, like Kat says, pro good life and offering support. There's groups for the moms after they have the child, and there's support groups for the dads too, to get the dads involved. We haven't talked.
Can I comment on that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I was a part of one of those groups that threw baby showers for expectant moms who didn't have support systems. And what always ended up happening was that they would reach out to me personally, because once again, it was usually black and brown girls. And the baby shower is nice and everything, and they appreciate it and all, but later on, they need real support. A lot of them call me because they were about to be evicted. They were like, well, we can get you Pampers. It's like, well, I don't need Pampers. I need money because I'm about to be evicted. And if you don't know, once you've been evicted, very difficult to get housing again. And so then a lot of times you end up living with someone who's abusing you and your kids. Like, this is part of a abuse cycle. That's what I want to make people aware of. Like, even though it's soft-pedaled as this caring, nurturing thing, you're actually getting involved in a very deep abuse cycle that a lot of times you don't even realize you're a part of until you get older. And by the time your prefrontal cortex has developed when you're 25, you could have up to 5 or 6 kids before you even realize what game is being run on you. So that's what I want to make people stoutly. I do believe we do need more support systems, but it's money. Like, the women need money to escape the situations they're in. So baby showers are nice, but that's a one-time thing for something that you're raising your kids for. I mean, they say 18, but my son's 20. He's still living with me. Like, he needs that support. He's not a fully grown adult. Like, we now know, like, the insurance companies have known for years, like, we don't let people rent cars until they're 25. We don't lower your car insurance until you're 25. It's because your brain isn't done developing until you're 25 years old. So the fact that we want these very young girls, sometimes as young as 12, to have babies by their abusers often is, to me, it's unjust. Like, it's not giving you a fair shot at life.
Sarah? I saw you shake your head. Go ahead.
Oh, just that, you know, she's, I think that when we champion abortion as a solution, it's not a solution at all. What it is it is an option that for some women they feel is necessary. And the addressing the problems from the social aspect, you know, it is so much more complicated than just, you know, throwing a baby shower and giving somebody, you know, an ultrasound.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to simplify that, by the way. I was just saying, like, isn't it people have to realize they have nobody, and jobs are a part of these kind of, I mean, jobs are a huge part of it, and maternity leave and I mean, you're kind of heading the direction I was about to ask you to take us anyways. The discussion we had last night.
Yeah, the discussion we had last night was that there's an interesting feminist argument when it comes to abortion that you can absolutely believe that it is a moral negative, that it is something that we shouldn't have, but that championing it as the solution to women's equality is a subpar solution to we have a world and an economy that is set around men's cycles and men's bodies rather than being built from the start to be inclusive of women and women's reproductive cycles. You know, you touched on at the beginning of the episode that, you know, realizing how difficult it is to be a woman. And a lot of that is because our society is built around men have 24-hour hormone cycles and reproductive cycles. So you have similar experiences day to day, whereas for women have 28-day reproductive cycles. So the reality of just living life with the hormones of a woman is very different than it is for men. And the reality of producing children, the you know time you have to take off because of how physically taxing it is to birth a child, to you know gestate a child. And the easy solution to that from a capitalist perspective is if you want to have women be involved in the workforce, you just need to make it so that they don't have to be pregnant. And so how do we make it so they don't have to be pregnant? Birth control and abortions. Great, easy solution. But that's because the harder solution would be really critically looking at our systems in our society and the way that we do work and the way that our jobs are function and say, does this actually allow for a woman who has to physically produce the children to be a meaningful member of the workforce while also reproducing.
So is that why I've seen a lot of my more left-leaning friends like roll their eyes at the corporations that are giving you money for abortions because they don't want to pay you for maternity leave?
Yes, I think that's such a double standard. Is you are literally, you know, putting your foot down to say, well, we're going to pay you to make sure that you can still be a productive employee. Go get an abortion, come back, you know, don't miss your next shift. But it's really expensive for us to have to keep you on if you're going to have a child. So we're legally required to not fire you for 12 weeks. That's all you get. You know, that kind of imbalance shows that they're, you know, they don't view the issue equally. So if you really want to be kind of neutral on the subject, maternity leave is just as important to actually allowing women choice as abortion is.
Kat, we get to look the right way, do the right thing, be part of the trendy thing and say we're pro-choice. But we're not going to actually do anything that benefits you in terms of your benefits. I mean, talk about some of, so you said I'm pro good life. What are other things that are a part of that that you think are important to women to encourage life? I mean, where's the point of agreement to reduce abortion? What are the things that we ought to do culturally, you know, as a society, just to like move in a direction of being pro good life? Define that for us first.
So glad you asked, Chris. Man, it's education. Look at all those books behind you and Trisha. Love this gender life. I'm for it. Like this is that's what.
Please plug your podcast too. Talk about what the mission of your podcast is first.
I'm in the Fake Ass Book Club with my best friend Monica or Moni on the podcast. We want to encourage literacy. I feel like books are just so last century, and we want people to know like you can still read books. You don't have to get locked up to read books. You can read them when you're in when you're out. There's so much information there, and having these different narratives gives you so much more insight and compassion into other people's lives. And so since I've been on both sides of the fences, because I don't think that people realize how deeply segregated our lives are. So I grew up in an all-Black neighborhood, but I went to all-white schools. So I saw the same sort of inordinate thinking in both groups. And so when you read books from people centuries ago, recently, you'll notice the human condition hasn't changed much. We're having the same issues over and over again. And a lot of times they are deeply rooted in sex. So to me, it would be more real sex education, not what we're doing currently, but just because I think as now we're coming into an age where we accept that there are different gender expressions, different sexual expressions, there's different relationship expressions. All of this has a room in a free society. And that's what I want to see more of, like more of these conversations, more of this education of different people's perspectives. Because when I was a professed when I had an anti-abortionist stance, it was because I only knew about my experience. I was brought up in purity culture. So it's like, well, I'll never need an abortion because I'll never have sex before marriage. But then once you go off into the real world, you learn sex isn't always an option. Like it's because it's not discussed as much as it happens. Sex is so often not a choice for women. So I want people to be very aware of that. Even when I was staunchly anti-abortion, I still kind of in the back of my mind knew, like, if something happened to somebody I know, I'm not going to judge them for not wanting to have their abuser, their rapist's baby. Like, to me, here's another thing. I've been wanting to talk about this for a while. Is anyone familiar with the Dr. Klein story here in Indiana? The fertility doctor who was using his own sperm on his clients. Yes.
One of the, I went to the, for 2 years, I went to the Indy 500 banquet, and one of the yellow shirts that I took is one of those girls, Heather. She's in the documentary, and she...
There was no legislation on the books to prosecute him.
That's too
bad. To me, that's what was insane. And then, you know, the DA's like, I don't know what you want us to do. Like, you wanted some sperm. He gave you some sperm. It's like, no, you have to be aware that the fact that he threw out my husband's sperm and replaced his own is a crime. Nothing on the books for that. And the fact that Indiana, to their credit, did put something on the books, but there's no federal law against that. So right now, men could be doing that willy-nilly in their fertility clinics completely with impunity. And so, like, in a situation like that, if I found out that my fertility doctor had used his sperm instead of my husband's, yes, I'm getting an abortion. Like, that's that we're stopping that right there. I don't want a forever connection to this person. And like I said, I have a very staunch, like, I have a very outside of the box opinion on, because I've had to reform these opinions. So I don't believe that consciousness starts at conception.
Trisha, we haven't heard from you in a while. Where are the points of agreement? How can we serve? I mean, Roe v. Wade, everybody is gone. We live in a red state. You live in a mostly redder. It's a redder state.
Swing state.
It's purple, but what do we do now in terms of helping people in crisis? And where are the agreements that both sides can have?
I think we could all say we would like to see less abortions. I think so. Maybe people, you know, don't take any issue with people just deciding to terminate without extenuating circumstances. But an easy way to do that, and I just want to give props to Hody, Enemy of My Enemy. It's another show on the network. It's great. They did an abortion episode, and Hody actually was a paramedic that worked in a hospital.
They talked about abortion. They didn't do one live, just to clarify.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry. No, it was pre-recorded.
So they did an abortion episode. I saw a bad joke. Go ahead.
But Hody talked about, you know, he is pro-life, but kind of understands a little bit of the nuance of the issue, but talked about how every single woman that he saw in there had nobody with her and had low economic means and was alone. And if you look statistically, it's close to 75%, I believe, of women that get abortions live at or below the poverty line and are mostly women of color. So I think one of the biggest solutions would be to end the drug war and reform bail, because they don't have partners. They don't have anybody economically supporting them. And what happens is these young men are getting targeted by the police and being put into jail and into a system where they can't work. And they've done nothing to harm anybody but themselves. And I personally don't think, you know, especially marijuana laws, those are just insane to me. Ohio is insane. They can't make bail. So then there's this woman out there that has no partner. She does not know what she's going to do. And she feels like she doesn't have any other option. So I think if we ended the drug war, we would just see this spinning effect of, you know, people coming out of poverty, fathers in relationships, women choosing to have this child because she has somebody else around to support her. And I think it's a shame that we don't talk about that, because there's so many ills that would be solved by just ending the drug war.
Kat, did you, after every point, I can tell Kat's body language already. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I mean, there is something to that, but, advice a female relative gave me a long time ago that really internalized was that if you have a baby, that's your baby. And I mean, it's nice and all if the man sticks around, but, and to her credit, my uncle, he was in, you know, her life and her kid's life, his entire life. But to me, there's no truer statement. I had my kids because I wanted my kids and I could take care of my kids. Like, for women, having a partner, having an involved partner is good. But quite honestly, I needed everyone in my life to have my babies, not just their father. And when my first husband decided to go off and do whatever, I still was able to take care of my son. But of course, I'm exceptionally privileged. I have great education, great support network, and I really, really wanted him. So it is good to have partners. The drug war, yeah, I agree with you on that point, but I don't think that's going to make women want to have, like, just because you have a partner, because there's still so much sexism, and especially in, I don't know how it is for white women, but like, black men are really sexist. And so there's still this idea of most of the work is going to come down to you. So just, that's the advice I would give to every woman. If you have a baby, that's your baby. And you better want that baby, because they are going to take, I mean, they children just take. And if you're ready for it, it's fine. I wanted to go back to the education thing. I just learned this week that my mom, her sex education was so limited that when she had me, this was in, I'm dating myself, in the 70s, she didn't know it was going to hurt. Like, that's how limited her sex education
my,
was.
My grandmother told me, and she got married in 54, that she thought she was going to poop the baby. She grew up in a small rural farm town.
And she's from the South. So there's a very concerted effort to limit, when you understand like oppression, ignorance is such an important component of being able to oppress people, which is why I love books. I always say I'm the reason it was illegal to teach women and black people how to read. Because once you learn how to get the information yourself, you can be like, actually, because even in the Bible, like there's instructions on how to give an abortion if you think your wife is cheating on you. So even the religious right, like this is a very new issue to focus on, because they knew that this would be something emotional that people would hone on to. But throughout most of Christianity, 2000 years, this wasn't an issue at all.
Trisha, Kat wants to know if white men are sexist. You've been a part of reformed Facebook groups for the last 3 months. What do you think?
Yes. Oh my gosh.
No. And, you know,
I consider myself a fourth wave feminist, meaning I believe that women are individuals and should be treated as individuals.
Radical.
I do believe men and women do have unique characteristics. I do believe that. But yes, especially in these like reformed,
which is a type of, it's a Calvinist Christian stream.
And I grew up in
determination.
Yeah.
And it the pendulum has swung so far to the right. I think there's a resurgence of this very conservative ideas and patriarchal ideas that aren't necessarily biblical. I think we're seeing a lot of that come out now. It's kind of, you know, the left swing way over, and so the right's followed back over.
So, all right. So we've talked about.
I wanted to respond to the Bible not being patriarchal. I'm rereading the Bible right now with a friend. That's another Bible breakdown podcast at gmail.com. But the Bible's very patriarchal. I'm in Numbers 19 right now, and it's wildly patriarchal. Like, women don't have like anything. Like, they're very firm about that. Actually, there was one passage that was progressive where they did give a daughter their inheritance, but that's the only thing I found progressive so far.
Gnostic.
Quiet, I'm speaking, Gnostics. Trisha. I would argue Jesus is incredibly feminist, and the first time he reveals his divinity to anyone outside of his mom is to the Samaritan woman at the well. Like, if you look at the life of Christ, he is, I mean, radically feminist and empowers women across the board. So I would.
But he also has not come to change a jot or tittle of the law. And the jot and tittle of the law, because that's what they always bring back as a retort for when you try to do something progressive, because Jesus also said he hasn't come to change anything. And then you can go right back to that desert stuff.
Yeah, but in the Sermon on the Mount, he clarifies how much different, like, it's, anyways, we can't get, we'll get into theological arguments some other time.
I'll have you on my podcast. Yeah. I can talk about that. Back
here. Can I use the religion to kind of pivot towards the judicial future?
Well, one more, because I want you and Reinhold to have an opportunity. So we've got in the drug war and education. What are some other societal changes that we could make, Sarah, that are going to lessen abortion?
I mean, I'm a bad libertarian here, but I'm gonna go with what Kat had said. I think that if I could wave a magic wand and replace all of our patchwork of welfare programs with a UBI, I think that would go a long way towards enabling people to leave harmful situations and be able to choose life in those situations. But I also know that is a pipe dream, and you know, I don't have a magic wand that I could wave and replace the welfare state with a UBI. But for, you know, more grounded in reality, I think focusing on really trying to change our culture towards one that is genuinely accepting of women, and in such a way that, like, there's.
I don't understand. You're going to have to explain that to me. What is that?
So this is going to be one of those things that takes generations, and you can already see change that has happened. But I kind of relate this to Trisha's fourth wave feminist commentary, which is that a lot of our work to include women in the economic sphere and not just the home sphere of life has been trying to fit women in, to encourage women to be just as good as men, to do all the things that men do, without actually making space for women to continue doing the work that only women can do, which is really what we're talking about in this situation. Only women can do the work of reproduction. And we have not really fostered a society which encourages women to be able to engage in that without having to deal with some sort of penalty. You know, you still see economically, if a woman has children, even if she is well off, you know, upper middle class, has a great job and a great education, she will take a economic hit for choosing to have children. And we don't compensate for that really in our social relationships like we used to. We used to have this idea of, oh, well, you know, the men will do all of the providing and the women will do all of the child rearing, and there is no choice in the middle. But that way everything is split up. But now we have this expectation that, well, women should be able to do it all. And men have not really joined in with that, trying to change the culture to allow for more allowance of those realities of childbearing. You know, you're going to have to take time off of work. So how do we build a society that allows for both men and women to engage in that work of child rearing while respecting that women have to do the physical work?
My suggestion before we go to Reinhold, I just had to drop off the video because I had to scratch my ear. I got these like silicone ear cleaners. I think all abortion debates should require people using a Q-tip to clean their ears while they're discussing it, because you're never happier than when you're doing this, and you can't be mad.
This is so gross.
And I just think it would really...
Strong disagree.
That would change everything, Reinhold.
Actually, while I'm talking, can I just... I had a hard stop time. I had to stop at noon.
Okay.
So I have to get going, but I really enjoyed this. I hope you'll have me back.
Absolutely.
Trisha, Sarah, Reinhold, this was great. Chris, it's always a pleasure. Everybody out there, get at me at Fake Ass Book Club and the Bible Breakdown podcast, because listen, we get into it.
All right, Kat, thanks so much
Love
for being
you.
Here. We really
Your body belongs
it.
To you.
All right, bye-bye. Reinhold, and then we're going to go long, because I do want to ask the privacy question and the legality stuff. But Reinhold, anything to add on the large structural changes before we move on to that stuff?
Well, I've been saying for a long time that I think that society has to move forward before even the ideas of libertarianism we've been talking about for years is like, that's only going to work when society works hard to take care of everybody, take care of itself, right? So to care about what's going on in another person's life, to want to make sure that everybody's taken care of, to not turn a blind eye to people who are having, you know, problems through maybe the fault of their own or even no fault of their own, right? So like the homeless people and people who are addicted to drugs because of mental abuses, the things that happen then, not getting the mental health that they need. Doing all of these things, including getting rid of the invasion into our lives by things like the drug war and systemic racism and systemic sexism within our government. Once we can kind of get all of that out of the way, I think then a lot of this stuff heals itself, because most of it is broken because we're trying to tell people how they need to live without giving them the means to actually live the better life.
Sarah, go ahead and then, yeah, transition us.
Yeah, I would say, can I real quick to give my utopian where we could go in the future? So the beautiful way we could solve all of this and not have to have any arguments about this is to allow for technology to solve the problem. So right now, a lot of our debate is around the point of viability. We've moved up the point at which you can have a child to survive outside of the mother. But there's still a lot of both legal and ethical red tape around doing the kinds of research that will one day hopefully allow us to have artificial wombs and human fetal transfer. So one day in hundreds of years in the future, I can hope that we will have artificial embryos and women who want to be pregnant but can't conceive on their own, who are able to hook up with women who have unwanted pregnancies and go to a transfer clinic and take a pregnancy out of one woman who does not want to be pregnant and put it into either a machine that can gestate it to the point where it can be independent or into a woman who does want to be pregnant. And we won't have to have this conversation about, you know, legislating what women can and cannot do with their bodies, because we will have solved the problem of, you know, maintaining that life. But that is still probably a few hundred years in the future.
So let's talk about some of the legal stuff, because one thing you guys keep bringing up is privacy, and I keep seeing it from the left, but I don't know what you people are talking about, because I'm so blinded by the fact that lives are being terminated that I go, yeah, but so when Reinhold, you talk about the privacy and the change in Roe, is it what happened to Jane Roe, Sarah and Reinhold, where somebody overhears something and then we're putting, because basically pre-Roe, you had, every state had different laws and a patchwork of laws, and you were prosecuting doctors and nurses. So, and then Roe was kind of different because she was prosecuted and put in jail for the abortion. The mom was put in jail. So go ahead, Sarah.
Well, so prior to Roe, there was another Supreme Court precedent that actually ruled on the medical portion of this, where a lot of the laws were, you know, they accept the life of the mother. That came down to a decision between the woman and her doctor. And the Supreme Court had actually ruled before that determination of if it is a risk to the life of the mother can also include things like economic risk and mental health risk. And therefore, it is just a decision between her and her doctor. It came down to kind of have to just find somebody who will agree that you deserve an abortion in this situation and sign off on allowing you to do so. But as far as the, just go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, we've already seen some of this too. In there was an email that was sent to hospital staff, you know, nurses, things like that, on the new law in Texas, where they have to now report on any cases that come in for women who fall into a category of certain symptoms that might fit along with an abortion so that they can be investigated. And the list of things that can be symptoms of an abortion are very broad, like arrhythmia, having heart palpitations, bleeding. All of this stuff is, there's a lot of other reasons why that could be happening. So now we're telling by law that these medical professionals have to report to the police all these situations that are then going to go get investigated. And I think that's a huge violation of privacy. It's more of a...
Yeah, you would go, like in one case, a woman got an abortion. Her doctor said no, and then went back after complications, because there were usually complications.
So,
and you just have to hope that the doctor that is treating you isn't going to turn you in for having vaginal bleeding.
So the medical reality of abortions pre-Roe and now are very, very different. So the majority of abortions that are done now are not the surgical abortions that were done pre-Roe versus Wade.
Okay,
it used to be that you had to go in and have a doctor who would physically remove the pregnancy, the amniotic sac from your uterus. But now most abortions are done through abortion pills.
Mm.
So it's an outpatient procedure. It's two pills. One pill that you take stops your body from producing and releasing progestin, which is what keeps your uterus. It basically is what keeps the pregnancy in your uterus. It's the hormone that your body produces in order to maintain the pregnancy. So you take one medicine that stops your body from producing that. And then the second medicine causes your uterus to contract and expel whatever is inside of your uterus. So for most women, that's how they do abortions. They're done at home and they're physically indistinguishable from miscarriages. So when we talk about why would this be something that would result in miscarriages getting investigated, it's because there is literally no way to tell the difference between a woman who took pills at home and induced a miscarriage or an abortion and a woman who did nothing and had a spontaneous miscarriage or right. abortion.
So it's not now when you see like the forceps being put in, ripping the child limb from limb. That's not how abortions are done in 2022.
Not the majority. So okay. later term surgical abortions, that is what we're talking about, is they go in and they physically remove the fetus. But before 12 weeks, there's just, it's I think two pills of one and four pills of the other that you take over the course of 48 hours. And
so what's to stop me from calling the Canadian pharmacy and having them send me RU486 if that is even used or whatever?
Absolutely
the debate over that.
That's mifepristone is what that is.
Okay.
That absolutely nothing. That is one of those two pills. So that's really the problem of bans now. You know, we can just go back to the libertarian concept of bans don't work. That when we're talking about trying to ban abortions at this point, before 12 weeks, that means trying to ban pills from entering your state and being used by a person. Now, how has that worked so far with other pills that we try to keep people from taking?
Yeah, like I can get ivermectin. And I wish Kat were still here because Kat is pro vaccine mandates. And that was one of the things that we argued a lot about. I was like, how can you be pro choice and argue bodily autonomy, but then you're going to force me to get a vaccine? She argues for the public good. And I'm like, that makes no sense. Like, you can't. I don't know. Does anybody want to weigh in on the bodily autonomy of the dichotomy of these two sides having completely divergent opinions on two different issues?
Well, what I find.
Reinhold first, white male wins.
Yeah. What I find interesting is that the decision to strike down Roe v. Wade could also be used as a precedent to say now that mask mandates and vaccine mandates are completely constitutional. And what's funny is watching all the people who are screaming against mandates, vaccine mandates and mask mandates, which, you know, are the ones who are also now saying, hey, we should get rid of Roe v. Wade.
Why would this be a justification for that?
Well, because what it's saying is that there's nothing in the way that the decision was written, which was, in my opinion, horrible, was saying there's nothing in the Constitution against for abortion. There's not a mention of abortion in the Constitution, therefore they have no power over determining whether it's constitutional.
To paraphrase there's when the 14th Amendment was written, there was no reasonable expectation that you had a constitutional choice of abortion and it was outlawed, and so therefore this doesn't count. But then he also kind of mentions this could also be used for prostitution and other bodily autonomy.
Same-sex marriages.
Well, no, Clarence Thomas.
There's no ninth.
Clarence Thomas has been slandered. I'll argue with you on that later. But let's stick to the mandates thing. Sarah, I know you mentioned this too, Reinhold. But Reinhold, finish your point, because I love to interrupt Reinhold. Mansplain him.
There's no Ninth Amendment protection now for you owning your own body, right? That was what we always, as libertarians, we try to say that part of what we're talking about is self-ownership, that we own our own bodies, that no one else can tell us what we can do with our own bodies.
How does the Supreme Court returning the decision to states erase Ninth? What are you talking about?
Because there's a Ninth Amendment that states that just because a right is enumerated within the Constitution does not infer that there are no other rights that people retain.
But what the decision said is that this isn't enumerated into the Constitution, and so therefore it's up to the states or the Congress to articulate this constitutional right. Roe created that constitutional right.
That's saying that the Ninth Amendment is an ink blot, that it doesn't exist.
Well, the problem is that Roe was not just argued on Ninth Amendment. Casey was determined completely on 14th Amendment grounds. Sorry, I'm going to be off camera for the remainder. So the problem is that what they determined was that the argument, I put a quote in the private chat here. So to just quote from the majority opinion, it says attempts to justify abortion through appeals to a broader right to autonomy and to define one's concept of existence prove too much. Those criteria at a high level of generality could license fundamental rights to illicit drug use, prostitution, and the like. So what they held was that there is no constitutional right under the way that it was argued to individual autonomy. What it doesn't say is that there's no other right that could be argued under the Ninth Amendment or even the Fourth Amendment, but that's not how Roe and Casey were argued. So that's where you get into this kind of like legal, you know, fine points that this is not going to be the last time that the Supreme Court hears issues about abortion. I mean, at the very least, there are very legitimate interstate commerce issues that are going to have to be addressed. Like, how do you deal with if one state says you cannot use abortion pills? Well, what if you travel to another state and meet a doctor who is allowed to give you abortion pills and he mails them to your home? Is that allowed? Are they allowed to go after the doctor in another state? Those are the kinds of things that the courts are going to have to determine.
Which sounds like slave fugitive laws.
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. Because you're trying to control what people can do with their bodies. And that's because that physical autonomy, this is where we get philosophical, is an inalienable right. It's something that you can't proactively take away from people. It's why slavery wasn't something that was able to be universally enforced either. People still ran away from slavery. People will still seek out ways to use their bodily autonomy and be able to exercise that right.
Tricia?
Yeah, one of the issues I see here is I do believe in decentralization, but when it goes down to states, certain states make really, really stupid laws, and privacy is a big issue, because if you looked at what Texas did, and I don't know if it got up to the courts, where somebody could basically tattletale on somebody else and it needed to be investigated as far as abortion. So you have citizens that are able to just basically, you know, and what happens then, I think, is I don't know if a lot of people realize about 20% of pregnancies end in miscarriage. So that happens quite often. When somebody, say you have a miscarriage and there's somebody that, oh, I don't know, like this never happens with CPS or something, that doesn't like you and decides to send the cops to your home because you've had a miscarriage. Like these are really, this is a really slippery slope and it's really, really dangerous. That's one of the things that really bothers me the most, the precedent to start investigating every part of your private life just because you happen to have a uterus. So.
Reinhold, I we got to wrap. The baby has awoken over at Sarah's house, so we want to be respectful of the young child. We are pro-child on this podcast here. So let's start wrapping up. Reinhold, I know you wanted to rant about this, so the floor is yours. Give us your rant, my man.
Oh, I've hit most of my big points, but my rant is basically that if you remove the only indication in the Constitution of the support of body autonomy, and that the only legitimate function of the federal government should be to protect everybody's rights, everybody's natural rights, then allowing this to be decided by the states or by a county or something else other than the individual who is the one who has that body autonomy is a gross violation of that concept of self-ownership. We have self-ownership. That's what we argue, obviously, as libertarians, that we own our own bodies. And if you make a law stating that a woman, when she's pregnant, has to now become a forced incubator, you're telling that woman that she doesn't own her own body, that the government does. The government decides on what she can do with her body, not anybody else. So I have a huge problem with that concept. Now, I don't want to see abortions happen. I don't like the idea of abortions. I have still, you know, some basic trauma for the situations that I've gone through with my wife when we were trying to have children until we couldn't. And so I never want to see that happen. But I also understand that it's not my choice to make. It's that individual's choice to make and nobody else's. And that's really kind of how I see that sort of thing. So
I agree with
Sarah on one other thing too, is that we have been taking that viability date down further and further and further through technology. And once we get to a point where that no longer becomes an issue, that we can remove that, I think that really ends this whole discussion at that point.
Let Sarah go next so she can drop off. Go ahead, Sarah. Final thoughts.
Just that this is not the last time that we're going to have to see this as an issue. And when it comes down to it, if you really hate abortion, there are so many things that you can do that will reduce the occurrences of abortion. And it starts with really embracing the mothers in your neighborhood and the people who are flawed. I think the last thing that I wanted to mention is that from a religious standpoint, there are a lot of religions that are actually challenging the Supreme Court right now. Because they are concerned that these laws that are restrictive on abortion actually are a violation of their right to religious freedom. So currently there's a case where I believe it's in Florida, where there's a synagogue who is suing the state of Florida over their abortion laws, because in Jewish law, if the woman's life is at risk, then you are actually required to have an abortion. Under Muslim law, a lot of imams interpret that a woman has a right to abortion for any reason within the first 120 days. And there's even a group that wants to challenge a law on the rights of religious freedom for pagans, because under their ethics, they are required to end as early as possible any unwanted pregnancy, because they're demanded not to bring unwanted children into the world. But these are all different religious views on a very contentious topic. And now we got to take them all to court, because the concept of really just kind of keeping religion out of these issues, not trying to legislate morality and leaving these hard choices up to the individual, is something that's really hard for us to wrap our head around.
Yeah. By taking the case, they were going to cause more carnage. Like, if they had ruled the other way, they would have created new standards and it would have caused all kinds of issues the other way. But by taking the case, it's quite the thing. So Sarah, we wish you the best. Thanks for being here. We know you are giving us a real time example of the struggle of the mother and productivity in work. but we appreciate you so much, and thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. And he's happily having some peanut butter puffs now.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
Bye,
Trisha. Your final thoughts. I want to just address the Justice Thomas thing. So Thomas basically said, he did not say, let's go after Obergefell. Essentially, let's go after the Texas case where it was basically anal sex for gay men and some of these other things. He's like, if you want to be consistent, then you have to go after these things. But then in basically, Alito was like, we don't know what Justice Thomas is saying. This is only about abortion because it deals with life. And then Justice Roberts in his dissent was like, yeah, I'm the swing vote and that's never going to happen, so don't worry. So I think there's been a lot of information out there about Justice Thomas's comments, and that's sort of the very layman explanation of what he was saying, is let's be consistent. And Justice Roberts kind of gave some assurances. So if you are worried, now, that doesn't mean, Reinhold, that the AG of Texas and these congressmen from Florida and all these other people will say extremely dumb things. Part of a constitutional republic is, we talked about this with the statues, is that everybody gets to work everything out. And if you have a body that determines whether or not to take down a Civil War statue, all sides get heard, and then usually the right side wins. Abortion is largely contentious because society was advancing towards a more pro-choice position, and Roe v. Wade... Sorry, that wasn't me. Kind of sped up the process and changed the laws of those 43 states. Something like gay marriage, which was determined by society largely and government was a lagging indicator, is just not up for discussion. And they write about it in one of these decisions that essentially it's also easy. It's easy for the government to determine, okay, you two can get married, you two can get married, you two. Like, there's no complication, right? With abortion, as we've talked about, there's so many different layers of complexity here that it's not as clean cut as Obergefell. So I would say that if you are seeing a lot of information about how those rights are under attack, I don't know. I mean, I would have said Roe v. Wade, Reinhold, was never going to be overturned and wasn't a discussion. But I think this
is for years.
This is, I think, a moment where people need to get really involved in the discussions. Like, if you're concerned about IVF, if you're concerned about ectopic pregnancies, if you're concerned about just basic rights and rights to privacy, like we've talked about, as a lot of these states start to write or rewrite their abortion laws, you have to be contacting your representative. You have to be getting a meeting with them. You have to be engaged in the game, because Republicans will go too far and be ridiculous. That's just how it is. Right, Trisha?
Yeah. Are we doing final thoughts? Are we talking
you could, I mean, Reinhold, if you want to...
Clarence Thomas is married to a QAnon person.
Right, yeah. Reinhold, do you have anything that you want to add to what I said before Trisha's final thoughts?
Just to point out that what Justice Roberts or Justice Thomas is saying, that if we want to be consistent, we should take a look at these other things. And he's right. If you're going to be consistent, you either have that right to body autonomy or you don't. And this, if you don't have that right to body autonomy, then the government does have a say. They can make laws on who you can marry, on who you can, you know, be involved with, what sexual acts you can perform, etc. That's all within the realm of what was decided with Roe. And even though you have Tom, you know, the other justices saying, yeah, but we're not going to take any of those cases and we're never going to decide that, just tells me that they're not being consistent. They're going this route on this decision because of political reasons and not because of the law, in my opinion, and not because of a standard of you have this right or you don't.
I mean,
have this
the
right.
Constitution isn't consistent, you know, so that's an issue in and of itself.
Well, I think the Constitution is also not libertarian.
Hi, Sarah.
I saw, sorry.
Go ahead. You're
fine. I'm still here. That's something we sometimes forget, is the Constitution's great, but it's not libertarian.
Yeah, there's amendments to it.
Right.
And I'm going to use my back scratcher. See, if you have these discussions...
You just think about the fact that it actually, in the Constitution's existence, implies that we don't have bodily autonomy because they made me consent to something that I didn't consent to.
Okay.
Just right off the bat. So,
I saw one person anyway. Tweet, what if the Constitution's bullshit? It was a leftist. And... This is some libertarian, I think it was Mitchell Mankiewicz, wrote back, okay, Lysander Spooner. Trisha, final thoughts.
Yeah, I am pro-life, and I am a little bit ashamed of some of the way that my fellow pro-lifers are talking. I might have a bit more of a nuanced position than they do. If you want to make less abortions and try to get somebody to see your point about believing that that's a life and not taking a life, the worst thing you can do, especially if you're a man, is call them a hoe and laugh at them. And of course, yeah, if you are a pure virgin man that has never spread your seed, go ahead and maybe say that.
No. Don't make fun of our listeners.
But I just wish people could have... No, I wish people would treat people more lovingly, just because even if you believe that that person did something wrong, are you going out there and screaming at the people doing drugs? Are you, it, it's, it's no way to make it any better. It's not doing what you think it's doing. You know, you're just, you sound like a Pharisee. So I would just say, try to treat people a little more lovingly and look at the nuance of the situation. And, you know, that's the best way to try to prevent more abortions from happening.
I would highly recommend, if you want the correct Christian response to basically anything, it's Matt Chandler. But if you want a really good sermon on this and the responsibility of the Christian in this moment and how to react to it and the Christian position on abortion, The Village Church, A Sober Celebration of Life, I'll put it in the show notes, along with two podcasts that are on different sides that kind of break this stuff down. Opening Arguments, which is from the left, and Advisory Opinions, which is from the right. Both good podcasts that can give you much more informed legal nuance than this podcast. We're just regular people talking about big topics and giving our perspectives. But they come at it from, they're like lawyers that study this stuff. So three podcasts that I would recommend that you listen to. But, you know, Matt Chandler kind of talked about what you talked about, Trish, and what I talked about earlier. It's like, some of you think that you're being persecuted for your Christian opinions. You're being persecuted for being a jerk. So going out and being a radical asshole and then chalking it up to being persecuted is not how it works, buddy. Which I don't think many of our audience does that. But yeah, I would just say, I would reiterate it for my final thought that like, abortion's never fully going away. It's an issue of the heart. It's like suicide. You can legislate suicide till you're blue in the face, or war, or any of these things, that like, or drug use or homelessness. It's a matter of the way that you fix it is what we talk about on this podcast all the time. You serve your circle. You serve the 100 people around you. If you don't have 100 people in your circle that you talk to on a regular basis, then you need to get out and you need to make at least 100 people that you come into contact with. Get involved in a group. Get involved in a secular group or a church group or whatever. You need to be in community with people, and then look for opportunities to serve. And that is really how you start to solve all of these different social ills, is when you see somebody that's going through something, like our buddy Donald, who's here in the comments, you know, talking about how he was homeless and got a job and started budgeting and stopped doing drug use and has had to make the choice of, you know, do I want to spend this on meth or do I want to spend this on rent where I have a place to lay my head? I'm sure he wasn't alone in getting off of some of those things. And he has found community with the Bob and Tom folks, and that's given him a community. So you have to be a part of the solution. You have to be a part of the change, and you have to look at the contributing factors. Are you a religious person that if your daughter got pregnant, are you the person that she could come to and say, I'm pregnant, and would be received with love, or would be received with being casted out? I'm guessing if you listen to this show, you're going to be nice about it. But do you know people that wouldn't? You know, this is the time to kind of step up, get active, and start talking to folks. Let me check this before we go. Mentoring. Yes, Reinhold, mentoring is hugely important and can change lives. Like, are you at work? Are you mentoring the younger people? Are you a younger person that needs mentored? There's in Indianapolis, Edge or Starfish Initiative. There's a lot of mentoring groups that you could join locally, but you've got to get involved and start getting active with people. It will be great for you and your soul. Even if you're a secular humanist like Kat, it will be great for your, I don't know if she thinks you have a soul, but it will help. All right. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. We just appreciate you and thank you so much. This is a long discussion, but if you learned something, then please share it. That is the greatest way that you can help us. Thank you to Sarah and Kat and Reinhold and Trisha for being here. And thank you to all of our patrons who make this possible. And we really do appreciate all of you. Until next time, we say, I don't know. We don't have a close. I don't have a sign off. I need to think of something. Give me suggestions. Talk to you later.